Time for another Tom and Shane video. It's Tuesday. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday, giving you our thoughts on all everything going on in the world, I guess. Hey, don't forget to subscribe, ring the notification bell. You'll always be notified when we have another podcast or video or whatever we have up. And like us, leave a comment. YouTube really likes that. They give that a lot of weight and help us out. And if you'd like to support us monetarily, there's some great benefits for doing that. There's a link in the description below so you can see what the benefits are of supporting us. And if you're just doing this, or if you want to do this, we use StreamYard to do it. And you can see how easy it is because I can do it. It's pretty amazing. So, yeah, so do that. All right, today... nukes. We're going to talk about nukes, Shane. Will our nukes actually work? That's the question. I don't know, man. How many are there, and will they work? We haven't tested a nuke in 30 years, so just
that's
curious.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
Yeah, it's a rather remarkable reality. I mean, the whole thing started, of course, back in the 50s. And, you know, that was results of, back in the 40s. And, of course, that was a result of World War II and the great project that they had that was so secretive and nobody knew about it. And from that, of course, they made use of them in World War II, as we all know, when they, you know, unleashed them on Japan to end World War II.
Well, yeah, there's, I don't know. I've heard numbers all over the place, Shane, as to how many there are. So I don't know if there's an accurate number you can find without getting on a no-fly list. So,
well, you know, they topped out over 70,000 in 1986, and then Gorbachev and Reagan got together and came up with the Strategic Arms Agreement, and they reduced them there. There's probably around 13 to 14,000 still, but you read any of the papers and you know, you go to all the sites about nuclear weapons and the development by engineers and scientists, and they'll tell you the triggering mechanisms on them aren't, you know, they're not guaranteed. So a lot of these would end up being dirty bombs, which actually are just bad.
Well, what we've seen in the...
it's sort of like the neutron bomb we'll talk about, but... They say about 90% of them won't explode. So yeah. 1,300, 1,400 might, and that's probably enough still to just, you know, ruin the world, of course. It would be primarily in the Northern Hemisphere, as we know. You know, the Northern Hemisphere is clock. You know, the atmosphere runs clockwise, and then the Southern Hemisphere counterclockwise. So it probably wouldn't affect the Southern atmosphere because I don't see any reason why Russia would. You know, fire a nuke to anywhere south of the equator.
Yeah. Well, we've already seen in Ukraine that some of the Russian stuff hasn't exploded. You know, they have the casings sitting in somebody's house or something, but didn't detonate.
And, yeah, they. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know how to keep this stuff current. You know, there's all kinds of things I put this up on medium.com where I write sometimes, and you know, they've said that the nuclear arsenal is being constantly updated, and one of the guys was involved in it as an engineer, but he was saying that the deterioration of the original material is an issue, and also he says that they rely on tools that are astonishingly in short supply. So they have to use FedEx to ship the tools around so the personnel can practice the attachment and detachment of nuclear weapons. So that doesn't give me a whole lot of confidence there.
No.
Shane. I don't know. No. That made me feel too good.
And, you know, it was Truman who decided to use it on August 6, 1945, U.S. Air Force. Mm-hmm. Detonated a uranium gun type fission bomb, they called Little Boy, on Hiroshima. And then on the 9th of August, 1945, the U.S. Air Force detonated a plutonium, and it was an implosion type fission bomb, nicknamed Fat Boy. So the uranium gun type was, you know, was meant from both, you know, explosives from both ends to collide on the uranium for it to split on Little Boy, and was successful. Now the plutonium, it was a implosive device, meaning it was in a round circular bomb, and so the explosives were completely encircled, and they were all wired separately so that they would all explode exactly at the same time, and that was to split the plutonium. So, you know, they're both fission bombs, but you know, then they came up with a fusion bomb, and you know, and that was just horrific, because it's, you know, it's the Trinity test that they had, and you know, that was part of the Manhattan Project overall.
Yeah. Well, in 1961, Russia tested the largest device ever exploded on the planet, the Tsar Bomba, north of the Arctic Circle. Isn't everything north of the Arctic Circle? I don't, not sure about that, but so much.
Yeah,
for
it's
the
North
polar
Pole. It's, you know, it's ice and forest. Yeah, exactly. It apparently blew down 200. It created not only a hole, it's significant, but I mean, the initial explosion, 200-mile radius, you know, it knocked down all of the deciduous trees within 200 miles. So, I mean, it was one of those, we really shouldn't do this. Yeah, even the Russians didn't want to do that again.
Yeah.
It was a hydrogen aerial bomb, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So it went off about 500 feet above the ground.
Yeah. So, well, I don't know. I hope, I don't know. From what I read, Russia has about 6,500. I hope they don't have 6,500s of this baby. But
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Well, but today, real quick context here. So the governments in the country that announced, U.S. has 5,800 weapons, mostly missiles and sub. Soviet Union, 6,300. China, 320. And then, of course, France, you know, 290, and the United Kingdom, 250. India, 150. Yeah. Pakistan, 160. And they're at war all the time, you know, on their border, you know, over a piece of property in the mountains. I mean, you know. Yeah. Anyway, Israel has 80 to 90. They don't know. And, of course, you know, North Korea claims they have. But those are the nuclear powers in the world that we all know about, we read about, hear about.
Yeah, that would be it. So.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm wondering, will they work? Will the rockets even work? You know, and as you mentioned, you know, attaching these things, the warheads to them, and will they explode or not explode? You know, that's the without constant testing, I don't know how you can determine how these things survive or how the material doesn't deteriorate over time. And you know, where do you get the material from and all of those questions. Even worse for the Russians, because, you know, we've already seen a demonstration of their missiles not working. So, you know, are they really the threat that we should be concerned about?
Well, you know, the Star Wars initiative that Reagan started created a whole bunch of interesting, like the Sprint missile, which is an anti-ballistic missile. Mm-hmm. The idea, of course, being to shoot it down and, you know, destroy it in space before it arcs over and opens up. Because a lot of the missiles, ground, underground missiles, both countries have are multiple warheads. They have 6 to 8 warheads on each one, so they go up in space. The warhead separates, it comes down, and after it comes through the atmosphere, the lid pops off and it disperses the, you know, whatever number of bombs that they have. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the whole idea was that, you know, mutual assured destruction has kept us away from it. And Star Wars didn't prove to be exactly what Reagan wanted, except for the technology for fast missiles, and to develop anti-ballistic missiles, ABMs, as we call them. But you know, your Minuteman missiles in Montana, they're still good. They're 70 years old, but they're liquid rockets, liquid rockets, and you know, it takes 24 hours actually to fully fuel them, and that can be seen from space. So the Russians have the same problem. Any attempt to, you know, start the process to have their ground underground missiles, you know, ready to fire. The U.S. with the new satellite technology would know well in advance of what they may be intending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's what I was wondering about in our next question. What about the rockets? Because you know, what about the pollution of these rockets? I mean, come on, global warming? Are you kidding me? Start firing off a bunch of rockets. Is that like the volcanoes going off? I mean, you've seen these things take off from, you know, Cape Kennedy or Canaveral or wherever the hell they take off from now. But, yeah. I mean,
well, and that's the other problem that you have is because all these weapons are designed to go off between 250 and 750 feet above ground. They're not intended to hit the ground and explode. That definitely turns it into a dirty bomb.
Yeah.
Where there's no, you know, there's no nuclear fission that takes place. But as you said, the material inside explodes and then it goes into the air with dust. And we know what dust does. It creates the particles for snow and rain and circles potentially circles around the planet.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's sort of where we're at right now. And I you know, I didn't think that that Putin would go into Ukraine, but he did, and it's a weird space to find, you know, people. What side are you on? I mean, what happens if he happens to use one of these, you know, ground based, you know, field artillery or tank, you know, neutron bombs, you know, and you know, that was something that was looked at by Samuel T. Coleman at Livermore National Laboratories in 1958, and they initially started doing what's called the Dove and Starling projects in 62. And by 63 and 64, they were looking at doing underground testing with it and looking at putting them on what's called the MGM-52 Lance short-range missile, which would, again, you know, short-range being miles. You know, but again, you're talking about something that would be shot in the air with the intent of going off, you know, at 500 to 700 feet. So all of these things, while tested, seemed to work out well. By 1974, and Jimmy Carter spilling the beans about the neutron bomb, because the concept of it is it's sort of a low yield, insidious bomb. That would explode and spread radiation and kill everything, you know, humans, animals, plant life. But it wouldn't destroy anything. So you could then, you know, go in and you'd be able to take over a city or an urban area and it wouldn't be as radioactive, you know, it'd be livable within 5 to 10 years. But
yeah,
the long story short on that is that the testing went on through the 60s, and then the safeguard program came along, and that was the shutdown, and all of these in the United States neutron bombs were put in storage and decommissioned in 1980. Of course, that was a result of Jimmy Carter bringing it up, you know, like he did your wing aircraft and sort of spilt the beans to the world that no one knew about. It wasn't until in 1978 that the Russians detonated a neutron bomb. And they're the only two countries that have. And Reagan restarted production of our neutron bombs in 81. And but then in 83, when he announced the Strategic Defense Initiative, it surpassed in cost the neutron bomb production. And, you know, the bombs quickly faded from any center of public attention because Reagan didn't fund them. And then it was George Bush, you know, who decided in 92 at the end of the Cold War to dismantle. And by 2003, they had dismantled all the W-79 Mode Zero field weapons. And, that was completed and there aren't any the U.S. claims. So that's where the U.S. is. They don't have any of these. So this is why it becomes scary, because if there were if Putin was to use one of these that he has, which he shouldn't under start, and it you know went east or west, you know the radiation, but it should go west east, but because in the hemisphere, the northern hemisphere. But if it happened to go west and go into a NATO country, you know they don't have a low yield weapon to respond with. That's the problem, right? So
Germany,
they don't have them. Nobody has them but Russia under the START agreement. No one has neutron bombs. Even China claims.
Well, not a neutron bomb, but they've got.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So yeah. The West would have to go to the next level up, you know, to a big boy,
yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah.
Because they have no little boy, so to speak.
Yeah. All right. Several well-respected analysts have indicated a greater than 50% probability of Russia's use of nuclear weapons for the purpose of creating terror in the West within the next 2 years. So,
well, it's a huge.
If he uses them, he's going to use them in Ukraine.
It's a first shot thing. I mean, it's a declaration of nuclear war. And all these are all the same people, including the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you know, five-star general, you know, that said, Ukraine would be done in 2 days. And, you know, they had like 3,600 guys from the CIA and intelligence agencies of your country saying, oh, Ukraine's finished. And, you know, where are all these people now? I mean, we're like 45 days into this, and it may end up protracted like the Afghan war. But the Ukrainians are fighting for their homeland, and they have all the tools. They're not a bunch of Arabs living in caves, you know. And you know they have and are succeeding in harming and destroying most of what the Russians moved in with. I don't know. I just it's one of these things, you know. Like look, he could be off his rocker, Tom. I mean, maybe he thinks he's the Antichrist or something and he's going to end the world. I don't know. I can tell you is what we're dealing with nukes, what we have, what we don't have, what he has, and, you know, what's he going to do about it?
Well, it's going to be interesting because in the Ukraine, of course, before this invasion, Ukrainians weren't allowed to have weapons. They couldn't have guns or
whatever. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, what you've got, you got a bunch of people with weapons of no training and no, you know, they might have got a 10-second thing. Here's how you put a clip in, pull this thing back and start shooting. And that's about what they have. And they've done pretty remarkable, as you point out, how long this thing's been going on. And they still haven't got the capital city yet. So... it's pretty interesting. And how far is Putin going to go? Is he going to drop a low yield something in there? And if radiation blows into a NATO country, is that a act of war? And that would include us because an attack on one's an attack on all.
Exactly. It's like World War One. You know, the same thing. That's what was the cause of World War One becoming a world war.
Yeah.
But there's three primary weapons the West is providing Ukraine. Like the Stinger is the Stinger is a ground launch missile for planes. Then you have the TOW. The TOW weapon is the Stinger is a shoulder mounted and fires at helicopters, and then you have and jets, and then you have the TOW, which is it's a ground weapon. And it's small, and you fire it at a tank. Mm-hmm. But these sling weapons, these drones that we've talked about, you know, you and I talked about it when 60 Minutes, you know, told the world about the Department of Defense developed them, because each of them carry a package of 5 pounds of explosive, and they're AI, you know, artificial intelligence, and they all talk to each other. So they scope out the targets, and then they all decide which to descend on and attack. So if they're giving them sling weapons, and these aren't difficult to operate, you know, they're just basic drones, and they're very inexpensive compared to the TOWs and the javelins, other weapons. Amazingly enough, Turkey's one providing the majority of them. I don't know why, but long story short, a protracted war is not going to go well for Russia. It's just not. I mean, The more the weapons that are provided, you know, another $1 billion this week by your Congress was provided to and pushed through by your president to fund military. But they've been at war for 8 years. And then where was everyone? Why weren't they, you know, loading the Ukrainians up then? Why weren't they training and helping them then? Why weren't they? I mean, they've been at war. They could have had these missiles and this equipment, you know.
Everything in place, yeah, and they wouldn't have half their cities decimated.
They could have had them for the last 5-6 years fighting the Russians, who obviously, knowing they have them and getting better at it, would never have invaded. I mean, your democratic policy and political policy, and certainly your president's global policy, is basically the cause of it. Yes, it's Putin that decided to do it, but he did it because, you know, Biden, like all Democrats, you know, all the way back to Wilson, FDR, oh, we don't want to get involved, you know. I mean, and, you know, it's amazing. You know, Japan attacked the U.S. on December 7th. On December 8th, you know, FDR went to Congress, declared war. And then because of the agreement between Hitler or Japan and Germany, Hitler declared war on the U.S. on the 9th, Sunday, you know, or Tuesday the 9th. Yeah. And so, you know, the U.S. never declared war on Germany or Hitler, FDR. He just, you know, they declared war on the U.S. So, Democrats dealing with or deciding what the policy is in these cases have a really bad track record.
Yeah, they do. Well, the other thing, too, we need to think about, you know, the Russians, Putin declared back in 2017 that Russia is at war with the West and that NATO is attempting to surround and destroy Russian civilization, and that Russia revoked its no first use policy over a decade ago. Many informed analysts believe early use is almost inevitable. And when Putin decides to nullify the Baltic states, so Putin and his generals did not for a moment believe that NATO would do anything other than sue them for peace after Russian use of battlefield nuclear weapons. It's difficult to believe they're incorrect in that assessment. And I think that's probably true. I don't think NATO would do much of anything. I don't know.
Well, and Bruce brings up a perfect example and a perfect point because of what happened a week ago. He's absolutely right. The Stinger is a surface-to-air missile, which is primarily to take down helicopters, and the Javelin is a surface-to-surface, and the Stinger can take down planes, of course. And then the Javelin is surface-to-surface, like to take out tanks and personnel carriers. But the Harpoon, this is a terrific weapon, speaking militarily. Why didn't they provide them? You saw the Ukrainians use both Stingers and Javelins against the Russian Navy successfully in the harbor in the Black Sea, I think. You know, they blew up a supply ship, and the Russian Navy immediately moved away and so forth. Why haven't they had harpoons? Again, it's a weapon in the arsenal of the West that they should have given these people. So, you know, Maripold and Odessa wouldn't be under attack. I mean, it's... And all these things you look at, and it's like, is there some kind of insidious desire for this to go on? I mean, is there a policy with these wonks saying, oh, this is a great way to wear down Russia at the expense of the lives and the city? I mean, this is the destruction now we're seeing live, like we did in Iraq and Kuwait years ago. But you know, you're talking now from Ukraine all the way to Morocco, Libya. Then the last 30 years were beautiful countries, even run by communists, but they were all new. They were developed countries. Some of them were first world countries, and it's all gone. I mean, it's gone. All these cities. Sad. It just breaks one's heart. The destruction, the killing children, women, older people, it's, man has a terrible side to him, Tom.
Well, that's for sure, yeah. Bruce says, Stinger surface-to-air, Javelin is surface-to-surface, Harpoon is surface-to-water. So,
yeah.
There you go. So, clear all that up. all these names we got to know now, all these cities.
Well, but I think the important thing is we talked about the, you know, the battlefield weapons, and because people, you know, we just don't want people to have a misunderstanding of what their purpose is and how they work. So now you do. Mm-hmm. And as I said, they're insidious weapons. I just, as a human being, you know, hope that, you know, I mean, Sean Penn talking to Hannity was like a bit overwhelming for me at the suggestion of saying, you know, we should use nukes if we have to. I mean, to escalate this, it's just a horrible thought, Tom. It's got to stay with mutual assured destruction, Mad. It's got to.
Well, that's the deterrent, obviously. Mutual destruction is the deterrent and always has been, I think,
ever since
World War II, when people saw the effect of a nuclear weapon. Yeah. They haven't been used since. So, you know, and enough countries have them that if one country's attacked, then, you know, five or six will go after.
Well, that's right. I mean, for the last 70 years, you know, the Kashmir has been fought over by India and Pakistan. Mm-hmm. They both have nuclear weapons. 70 years. And, you know, every winter they all go home because, it's cold. Mm-hmm. Spring comes, snow melts, and they send in troops and they start firing, you know, guns at each other because, it's one of these situations. Like, India didn't do this with Tibet, like with China, but, they will with Pakistan, but they both have nuclear weapons. And they have, in their past, 70 years ago, 50 years ago, they did have border conflicts. And, Pakistan and India were the result of, at the end of World War II, where the Sikhs and Muslims moved to Pakistan from India. It was one of the largest human migrations in the history of mankind. Tens of millions of people left India and went to Pakistan, and you know, the Buddhists and so forth took over India, it's remarkable that you're fighting your family.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Hey, if you're just joining us, don't forget to subscribe. Ring the notification bell. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Mountain Time. Like us, leave a comment, because they all like that kind of stuff. And any final thoughts, Shane, before we bail out of here?
Well, let's all say a prayer for the people of Ukraine. And, I can't say anything more than say that it's a terrible situation you find yourself in, but like so many people of freedom in the past and with our history too, I hope you succeed in repelling and pushing this invader out of your country. I hope it doesn't come down to some kind of political settlement, because the Russians will never abide by it. They don't abide by treaties. They never have.
No, that's not going to happen. Yeah, no. So that's a broken deal before it's even started.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Reminder, we are on radio on Saturday, 8 to 11 Mountain Time. You can listen live anywhere in the world at KMMSAM.com. Just click listen now. There's no sign up needed, nothing to join. And if you listen to us by internet, every person who listens to us, an angel gets his wings.
There you go,
so
baby.
That's where you are, man. So
it's a wonderful life where we are.
It's a wonderful life, yeah. So
where we are.
Every Saturday, 8 to 11, Mountain Time. So get that on your schedule, so you'll be sure to do that. And if you missed any of our past shows, they're also at KMMSAM.com. Just click on Tom and Shane's podcast, and it'll take you over there. And you can check out any of our past shows, any of our YouTube videos and whatever. And we hope that you will take advantage of that. So, all right, Shane, I think that's going to wrap it up for us. So.
Well, you know my tag. Be happy, be safe, everyone, and live in the moment and live to work. And our prayers are there for the people of the Ukraine and the world, because this is definitely a potential repeat of the Napoleonic War, World War I and World War II. Let's hope that is not the case.
That's hopefully, absolutely. Let's hope that is not the case. All right. All right. Thanks for watching. That's going to wrap it up for us. And we'll see everybody on the radio on Saturday. And we'll be back here next Tuesday. So see you then.